If you do feel like expending any energy toward doing anything at all, you're more likely to try to feed yourself. Or, by some miracle, take a shower rather than doing the dishes. So you're already feeling crappy. And then you look around your messy house, and you start to feel even worse. You feel more depressed, because now you're exhausted and hopeless and can't pull yourself out of bed, and on top of that, your house is a shithole. Which makes you feel useless on top of everything you were already feeling, and then probably overwhelmed on top of that. And quite frankly, having that many feelings at once during a depressive episode is horrible and exhausting and paralyzing. So your depression gets worse, and your mess gets worse, and the two keep feeding on each other, and it seems like there's no end in sight. Good news, though. You can interrupt it. Don't get me wrong, it kind of sucks a little bit, but it can be done. The hardest part is finding the motivation. We've talked about 2010s, but I'm willing to bet that even that seems a little impossible right now, sort of like all of those detailed lists and schedules. It's more than you can handle, and that's totally fine. Remember, we're trying to work with reasonable goals here and not set ourselves up for failure. Instead of trying to get 20 minutes done, try for 5. Or 2. Or just put one single thing away. Start small. Start really small. Start as small as you need. It's okay. The most important thing is just to do something. Anything. It doesn't matter what it is or how insignificant it seems. You can do this. Try to do something. Anything, really, that allows you to interact positively with your home every day. Whether that's cleaning, organizing, or even just displaying something that makes you happy, aim for getting one thing done every day that makes you feel better about where you live. If you have something happening every day that makes you feel overall more positive toward your home, it won't seem so hopeless while you're in the middle of what feels like nothing but negativity or apathy. And never underestimate the importance of even just a little bit of progress. One of the worst things, among an almost infinite number of shitty things, about depression is that it makes you feel hopeless and worthless and like you can't do anything at all, let alone anything right. Setting yourself up for even the smallest positive accomplishment is so huge. You have this one small thing to point to as evidence that you aren't, in fact, worthless or hopeless. So what if it doesn't happen organically? The deck is already stacked against you here. You're not cheating. You're setting yourself up for a win, no matter how tiny it is. Clearing off your nightstand is a pretty big deal when you're depressed. Washing the dishes is practically like winning an Olympic gold medal. Why not give yourself a chance for one little positive emotion like pride or self-assurance when you otherwise feel kind of like shit? Cleaning your house is not going to cure your depression, but there's a good chance it'll help you feel a little less hopeless and desperate if you can look around and see that you're not surrounded by filth. It'll definitely help things seem a little less bleak. And when you're finally past this depressive episode, which you will be at some point, you'll have set yourself up in a better place to be a little less overwhelmed with all the stuff you need to do when you're feeling better. There's a lot of talk about self-care during depressive episodes, but it can be really helpful to take care of future you just as much as present you. Seeing what's happened while you were in the middle of a bad time can be hard, making you feel ashamed of how bad things got all around you while your brain was screwing with you. By doing even just the smallest bit to keep things kind of in order, not only are you giving yourself something to focus on in the moment, you're also making things a little easier for yourself once you're out of that moment, however long it lasts. In this process, it's so important to be kind to yourself. You might not be able to stop the negative thoughts flying through your brain, but that's okay. Show yourself some kindness. Be forgiving of what you're going through. Don't be too hard on yourself. A lot of this is out of your control. So take control over what you can and understand that the rest is going to happen. And it's going to suck. But you will get through it. Mini challenge. If you're in bed or on the couch, look at the surface nearest to you. It's likely a nightstand or coffee table. Set a timer for 5 minutes. Clear off as much of that surface as you can before the timer goes off. You can get right back in bed when you're done. Mini challenge. Gather up all the dirty dishes and bring them to the kitchen. Stop up the sink, fill it with hot soapy water, and let the dishes soak. Mini challenge. Take a shower and change your clothes. Put the dirty clothes into the hamper. Anxiety. For many people, cleaning and organizing can be major anxiety triggers. Lots of people experience some form of anxiety about housekeeping, but when you live with a mental illness, this can be exacerbated many times over. Anxiety can spiral out of control when it's feeding on thoughts concerning a messy home. Whether it's about getting started, finishing up, or doing things right, cleaning anxiety is a very real, very present thing. If you find your anxiety is triggered by cleaning, try narrowing your focus a little bit. When you look at the big picture, it can be distressing to try to process everything involved in fixing it. It might be helpful to look at the situation one little section at a time. Limiting the scope of what you're going to deal with can help lower the chance of your anxiety being set off. Clear boundaries and definite beginning and ending points can help add some necessary structure. Taking breaks is critical if you're dealing with anxiety that's triggered or made worse by cleaning. Periodically stopping is important because, in the midst of an anxiety episode, it can be very easy to keep going without pause and work yourself up even more. If you don't enforce taking breaks, you might soon find yourself marathoning, which is a good way to lose control. By giving yourself definite boundaries, you can keep from feeling like you need to keep going until it's completely done. Tell yourself you're only going to do 2 or 3 2010s and then stop. You have a predetermined end in sight, so there's no need to feel guilt if everything isn't done when you stop. Hold yourself to these limits. Quit when you planned to. You're not going to be able to get to everything at once, and you shouldn't. So give yourself permission to stop, and let yourself enjoy the accomplishment of finishing what you did, even if it wasn't as much as you'd have liked. Sometimes, making drastic changes in your living space can actually induce anxiety. And this includes going from messy to clean. You're removing a certain level of comfort and familiarity, and that can be disconcerting. Check in with yourself as you clean up. See if you can figure out how you're feeling when you look at an area you've just worked on. If you feel relieved or proud, it's probably fine to keep going. If you're anxious or upset, stop. Give yourself time to get used to the changes before you move on to the next thing. Anxiety can be very unpredictable, so if you feel yourself getting triggered, take a break, then maybe move on to something else. You can always come back to what you were doing. Mini challenge. Set a timer for 5 minutes. Gather up as much trash as you can find and throw it away, or recycle where applicable, before the timer goes off. Childhood cleaning trauma. For people who were raised in environments with unhealthy relationships to cleaning, cleaning can trigger anxiety, fear, depression, or panic. If you have a parent who was a hoarder, or you were raised in a household where cleaning was used as punishment, or you were disciplined for not cleaning properly or well enough, you may have some pretty negative mental stuff associated with cleaning. If this is the case for you, first try to figure out where your negative associations with cleaning come from. If you can isolate that, you have a much better chance of figuring out how to work with it. If, for example, you were punished for not cleaning correctly, or if cleaning was used as punishment, institute a reward system for yourself with stuff you truly love. Washed the dishes? Go buy yourself a fancy coffee. Put your clothes away? Play to the next level in your video game. Whatever it takes to begin realizing that cleaning doesn't have to go hand in hand with negativity. Children of hoarders face a particular set of challenges. Growing up in a home with a hoarder can lead to any number of psychological and physical problems, as well as the added challenge of trying to rebuild a healthy relationship with cleaning once you're out of the family home. Often, children of hoarders haven't developed the skills and routines associated with housekeeping that others learn in childhood. They may be lacking a context for when it's appropriate to keep things and when to throw them out. Although the children themselves may not grow up to be hoarders, although that certainly happens, hoarder parents may have passed on their emotional attachment to items, making it difficult for the kids, and the adults they become, to develop their own routines and standards. It's also not uncommon for children of hoarders to grow up with extremely high standards of housekeeping. An early lifetime without any control over your living environment, surrounded by mess and clutter and often getting physically ill due to living conditions, can prompt you to want to exercise as much control as possible over your home and possessions. It's a good idea for children of hoarders to consider finding resources, whether online or in person, to help them deal with the psychological effects of growing up in a hoarding environment. Mental health and housekeeping are often more closely linked than we realize. By understanding how cleaning and our mental health affect each other, we can interrupt the cycle that so often leaves us surrounded by chaos in a home we don't love. By developing coping mechanisms to lean on when our mental health is letting us down, we have the chance to come out on the other side a little bit better. And sometimes that's enough to make a difference. The messy house cycle. One of the toughest concepts for people to wrap their heads around when it comes to housekeeping and cleaning is the fact that it's a never-ending cycle. Cleaning, by its very nature, is never actually finished. That's probably the most aggravating thing about it, and that's why most people can't stand doing it. You're never done. How annoying is that? So we rebel against it or ignore it entirely, because why on earth would we bother doing all that work just to have to turn around and do it all over again in a few days or next week or next month? It's incredibly frustrating and makes the whole process seem pointless. And yeah, any task that needs to be repeated over and over really is a pain in the ass, because you never ever feel like you're finished. Hard truth time. You feel that way because you really are never finished. If you're looking at cleaning and housekeeping as an activity with an ultimate finish line, it's always going to result in a big F for failure in your mind. There's no way around it. So before we get too far into the process of learning or relearning how to clean our homes, we need to make peace with the fact that it is indeed a cycle. There is no real end. The point of figuring out a system for cleaning that works for you isn't to end that cycle, but to figure out which parts of the cycle you have control over, and how to work with them in a way that results in a clean, comfortable home, with the least amount of stress and frustration on your part. A lot of this will have to do with how long your particular cycle is. How long do you let go by in between the individual steps of dealing with any particular part of your home? This will determine how much time in total you're spending on that task and what the environment is like in between the times you're dealing with it. If your cycle for dishes is a week between using a dish and washing it, well, that's going to be a major contributing factor to your mess. If your cycle for dishes is once or twice a day, every day, you're going to find that you're actually spending less time doing them, and also that everything is a hell of a lot cleaner in the time in between. The shorter the cycle for any particular task, the less time you're going to take overall to do it. Sure, you're going to be revisiting the same thing more frequently, but by doing so, you're going to be spending a much shorter time doing it in general. Consider the difference between filing, recycling, or shredding one day's worth of mail. Maybe 5 or 10 pieces total? In a minute or two. Versus having to deal with several months' worth of mail, which can take the better part of a day. Not to mention that when you're spending a few hours or most of a day dealing with something, you're way more likely to get frustrated and disgruntled with it, whereas when you're just dealing with something for a few moments, it doesn't really have the chance to affect you at that level. So you just might find that when you start doing household tasks more often, you'll be less angry about them overall because you aren't spending huge amounts of time doing them. Let's take a look at the cycle as a whole. As you live your life in your home, You use items and interact with your environment. That results in things getting messy and dirty, and then everything needs to get cleaned up. And you keep living your life. So the use, mess up, clean cycle is ongoing and needs to happen again and again. People really seem to get stuck on that repetition part, and it's where most people who have difficulty cleaning get in trouble and give up. A lot of people seem to think that if they clean something once, they're done forever and that thing never needs to be cleaned again. Well, you can see how that might lead to feeling a little bit defeated when tomorrow or next week or next month comes around and that thing has been used once more and needs to be dealt with again. The positive thing about this cycle without an end, though, is that there is always an opportunity for you to do better, do more, do it again, do it right, or even do it at all. There's no such thing as failure in this endeavor, because it's ongoing and continuous, so there's no end point at which you have to admit you failed. If you don't do what you hoped to accomplish today, you're still going to have the chance to do it tomorrow, or next week. You can't fail at something cyclical like this. You may have times when you fall short of your expectations, but then you can try again and get it right, or even just closer to right. There will be days when you don't do anything at all, and that sure feels like a failure, but then you'll tackle a big project or really get the rhythm of something like laundry or dishes, and you'll feel like a tremendous success. So stop looking at taking care of your home as a pass-fail situation, and start to accept it as a constant chance to do better every day than you did the day before. The Perfectionist's Paradox. Perfectionism is a tricky concept when it comes to housekeeping. A lot of people use the fact that they're self-identified perfectionists as the main reason they can't keep a clean and organized home. Have you ever thought, if I can't do it right, why bother doing it at all? Or, if I can't finish, it's pointless to even start. It's a pretty common way to look at things, but it's kind of bullshit. Perfectionism is a double-edged sword. It's great to want to do everything exactly right, but it can also create a mindset in which you never start anything because you know you won't be able to do it perfectly. And more often than not, what we claim to be perfectionism is really just a bunch of other stuff like avoidance, feelings of inadequacy, impossible expectations, and so much more. Perfectionism tends to work as a convenient excuse to explain why you're letting your mess linger. After all, if you don't start, you can't finish in a way that doesn't jibe with your perfectionist standards. That's incredibly convenient, because you've just put yourself in a situation where your impossibly high standards are giving you a handy excuse to keep on doing nothing at all. And while it's not unreasonable that your standards are, in fact, that high, it's also quite possible that those high standards stem from good old-fashioned avoidance. There's a fair amount of contradiction in proclaiming that we can't stand for anything to be less than absolutely perfect while we're surrounded by an unholy mess of our own creation. While we're so proud of ourselves for having impossibly high standards, everything's going to absolute shit all around us. Saying you won't be satisfied until your home looks like a sparkling, pristine magazine photo means very little when your dirty clothes are littering the floor and you haven't emptied the dish drainer in weeks. This is the perfectionist's paradox when it comes to housework. Even though starting a load of laundry or putting the clean dishes away doesn't mean your home will be picture perfect right away, it'll definitely be nicer than it is right now. But nicer isn't good enough, so you do nothing. It's weird to look at a messy home and think, "Oh yeah, a perfectionist definitely lives here." But it's so common. The good news is that perfectionism can be unlearned. Perfectionists tend to be really hard on themselves in a lot of different ways. Rather than being constantly self-congratulatory for accomplishing so much so well, people who identify as perfectionists generally go through life feeling disappointed in themselves because nothing they do measures up to their own expectations. And perfectionism can come from a lot of places. Sometimes it's entirely internal and self-imposed. Other times, it's imposed on us by people who tell us our best efforts aren't good enough, or make us feel as though no matter what we do, it's wrong. And it can come from people we don't even know. Those unattainable magazine spreads, those smug, aspirational lifestyle blogs, All of that can make us feel like a perfect result is the only option. It's not. Not at all. And you aren't doing yourself any favors by buying into it. If you're hoping to change your perfectionist ways, it's worth examining why your standards are so high. Were you raised in an environment with people who didn't accept your best efforts unless those efforts resulted in excellence? Do you come from, or currently live in, an environment in which you feel like nothing you attempt is good enough, regardless of results? Were you praised during your formative years for being exemplary, and now you feel like you have to be immediately great at everything you try, or else you'll let people, including yourself, down? Whether your drive for perfection is internal or placed on you by the expectation of others, it's worthwhile to try to figure out why you feel the way you do and how you can begin to overcome it. But why should I try to overcome it? You may ask. Being a perfectionist seems pretty awesome, doesn't it? I mean, you want everything you do to be correctly done and absolutely perfect. What could possibly be wrong with that? Well, a lot, really. By saying nothing but 100% is good enough, what do you do when 100% isn't possible? Most likely, you do nothing. As we've established, even a small amount of progress is preferable to not getting started at all. Life doesn't exist at only 0% and 100%. There's a whole continuum of stages along the way, all of which mean you've progressed beyond 0% and are well on your way to 100%. But don't underestimate the importance of all of those other stages. You need them. They're necessary and important, even if your goal takes a little bit longer to achieve. For your own sake, try to let go of this ideal of perfectionism. It's holding you back in ways you probably can't even see. Not only are you holding yourself to difficult or potentially impossible standards, you're giving yourself the okay to just avoid the problem entirely. Start trying to embrace small amounts of progress. Do a 2010 or two and take a good critical look when you're done. No, it's not perfect. But is it better than when you started? If so, try to realize that any small improvement is more attainable and therefore more important than a perfect result on the first try. Doing something is always better than doing nothing. Even if you can't finish completely, you can at least get started and find yourself having made some progress rather than none at all. This doesn't mean you have to stop deriving satisfaction from a job well done. It just means you may need to redefine what a job well done really is. If, in the past, you've been dissatisfied or unhappy with your progress until a project is complete, try giving yourself permission to stop partway through and take pride in what you've managed to do up to that point. Stopping before you normally would is great because it allows you to see that something exists between haven't started and completely done, and that whatever effort you've put forth is valuable and worth celebrating. Forcing yourself to stop before the task is completed can be stressful and a little anxiety-inducing, so this is one of those times to reward yourself. If you do 2 or 3 2010s where you would normally do a full-day marathon, give yourself a treat to congratulate yourself on shaking up your way of thinking a little bit. While you're at it, check in with your feelings and reactions during this process. If you really can't shrug off feeling disappointed or feeling like a failure, try giving yourself a smaller task that can be completed fully in a short period of time. That small victory of a fully completed job might just be enough to get you through that wave of negativity and closer to a sense of accomplishment. Or try taking before and after pictures. It's hard to argue with indisputable physical proof that you have made a noticeable and documented improvement in your surroundings. Try to recognize that a lot of the judgment you're feeling at this point originates internally. We are, for better or worse, our own worst critics. But there's no reason we can't also be our own biggest cheerleaders. Self-perception, when you get right down to it, is really the most important view of ourselves. So be as kind to yourself in your own mind as you'd want everyone else to be to you out loud. Overcoming actual and perceived perfectionism can be tricky. It's difficult to give yourself permission to do something imperfectly or incompletely. What's important to keep in mind is that perfection is an impossible ideal. Even if you get your home perfectly clean and organized and gorgeous, you still live in it. You need to remember that no matter how well, how thoroughly, how perfectly you clean, it's going to get messy again. And it's going to do so pretty quickly. It's too easy to see this as a failure on your part, when it's absolutely not. If it were possible to clean something so thoroughly that it stayed clean forever, no one would ever need to listen to a book like this. Hundreds of websites and magazines would cease to exist, and messes would be a distant memory. Obviously, that's not the case. Shit gets messy over and over again, and it needs to be cleaned over and over again. Embrace the imperfect, knowing that you'll have plenty of chances to do it over and get it right, or close to right, even. Reframe your thinking to acknowledge that the value in a task isn't necessarily in its completion, but in the very undertaking of it, no matter how far you get. As important as letting go of the idea of perfectionism is letting go of perfectionism as part of your identity. When you think that perfectionism is a defining part of who you are, it's that much harder to overcome the expectations you put on yourself as a result. Perfectionism isn't who you are, it's something you do. It's a behavior, a mindset, not a fundamental part of your personality. You can let go of perfectionism without sacrificing who you are as a person. It might be difficult, moving on, to accept something less than the flawless execution of a task. But if you can learn to derive the same feeling of accomplishment from simply doing, rather than doing perfectly, you'll probably be better off. Not to mention that things will actually start getting done. If you're setting unattainable goals for yourself, not accepting anything less than a perfect result, you're not being fair to yourself. You're setting yourself up for failure at every juncture, and being ruled by catastrophic thinking. If my house isn't spotless, I'll die of embarrassment. Striving for perfection, like any other source of anxiety, is something that's not entirely within your control. But you can limit or mitigate the black-and-white thinking that dictates perfectionist tendencies. Let go of perfect and embrace good enough. Engage in realistic thinking. What's the worst-case scenario if the task is imperfectly done? Is having a somewhat cleaner living environment better than whatever it is right now? How much imperfection can you comfortably live with? Once you can answer these questions and figure out how to move forward with progress, no matter how imperfect, you'll be happier in general, as well as happier with your home and the mess within it. 2. Unfucking your own habitat. Building habits. More stuff than storage. Cleaning basics. Small spaces. Building habits. It's really easy to decide you're going to make broad, sweeping changes to your life and the way you interact with your stuff. It's a hell of a lot harder to actually do it. The larger the change you're hoping to make, the harder it is to make it. Expecting to just wake up one morning with a clean, organized home and the ability to keep it that way is just setting yourself up for all kinds of disappointment. There's a reason that all of your past attempts haven't been successful. You can't change everything all at once, and you shouldn't try to. One of the main reasons so many of us fail to maintain our homes, even if we manage to get them clean in the first place, is because we haven't done anything to change our habits. Marathon cleaning is not a habit. It's a one-time deal, an intermittent and unpredictable binge with nothing to follow it up. In between marathon sessions, you aren't doing anything to prevent yourself from needing to do another one down the road. The only way we can be successful in not just getting, but keeping our homes clean is by changing our daily habits, both large and small. Actually, the small changes are the most important. They require the least amount of time investment and the least amount of thought, but over time, those small habits are going to be what make the biggest difference overall. Completely restructuring the way you think about and approach cleaning is a massive undertaking, and not everyone can do it easily. What you can do, though, is flip a series of tiny switches in your behavior that add up to noticeable, sustainable changes. Once these habits are second nature to you, you'll find your overall mess is reduced by a lot, and the amount of time you spend dealing with it will drastically decrease too. These changes are useful because each one is relatively small, and small changes are so much easier to make and maintain than big ones. So by incorporating each of these small habits into your everyday life, you'll be making a big difference without having to completely change your mindset. And because of that, you'll be in a much better position to keep up with things where you may have failed to do so before. Do a little bit every day. This ties back to 2010s and incremental progress. By doing something, anything, every day, you avoid the need for a massive cleaning session once a month or once a year or just once ever, whatever it is you've been doing. If you're doing even a small amount of work on a daily basis, you not only catch up with the mess you've made that day, but also help yourself get a little bit ahead of the curve by making a dent in your baseline mess. Over time, you'll find that with just one 20-minute session on the days you don't have time, you can start in on the bigger projects that have been plaguing the landscape of your home for longer than you can remember. As far as not having the time, especially during the week when you're working or at school or trying to keep up with everyone in your household and the million things you're each involved in, well, I'm pretty sure we all manage to find 20 minutes to catch up on Facebook or to see what's on Netflix. So it's not that we don't have time. It's just that we're choosing to prioritize the little bits of time we do have differently. Use your leisure time wisely. About that Netflix thing. We're extremely lucky to live in a technologically advanced, highly mobile era. But these privileges can be an incredibly effective distraction, allowing us to lose hours at a time to do something that's caught our interest. Do something while you're catching up on your series. Fold clothes and pair up all of your socks. Bring the laptop into the kitchen and clear off a counter. Find a 20-minute podcast you like and use it as a soundtrack while you catch up on dishes. You don't have to stop your life in order to clean. You can integrate a little bit of housework into what you're already doing. When you're trying to incorporate a small cleaning session into each day, you may find it helpful to get your 20 minutes in as soon as you get home, before you change out of your outside clothes and while you're still in a working mindset. Once your mind transitions to, "I'm home, I'm relaxed, and I'm going to be living on the couch in my underwear until I go to bed," it's really difficult to transition back into, "Maybe I should load the dishwasher." Figure out when you're likely to be able to squeak a tiny bit of productivity out of your tired self, and make it a point to do something when you can. Use your waiting time efficiently. We all have short spans of time during our day when we're stuck waiting for something else to finish before we can move on to the next thing. Learning how to use that time instead of letting it pass is a great habit to get into. While your coffee is brewing in the morning, unload the dishwasher from last night. Once you put dinner on to simmer or bake, wash all of your prep dishes so there's less to do later. Does your shower take a while to heat up? Use that dead time, and a sponge soaked with the not-hot-enough water, to wipe down the bathroom counters. While the microwave is going, wash a few dishes. Every little bit helps, and it's time that you'd be wasting by staring off into space anyway. Might as well be productive, right? There are a million little things we can do while we're waiting on other things. What's great about almost all of them is that they're really easy, low-investment, low-commitment things that still make a big difference. Once you start doing this, you'll find yourself surprised by how little time it actually takes to do things compared to how much time you're assuming it will. Get into the habit of not staying idle while life annoyingly takes time to happen around you. Put it away, not down. One of the most effective habits for keeping our chaos under control is putting things away where they belong, instead of just setting them down. Every time you set empty packaging on the counter instead of putting it in the recycling bin. Every time you kick your shoes off and leave them wherever they land instead of sticking them back in the closet. Every time you return from a shopping trip and set the bags on the counter instead of putting the items away. you're making the mess worse. By being mindful about where items end up, you can keep the chaos from escalating. Once you have a clean surface, room, or home, the very act of simply returning things to their proper place will make more of a difference than almost anything else. Don't have a home for all your things? You need one. Go straight to more stuff than storage. Once you start becoming aware of where you're putting things, you'll notice that it's not really as much work as you think to put things away instead of setting them down wherever. The best part about changing this particular habit is that the better you become at it, the less you have to clean up later on. It's basically a gift from right now you to future you. You're never going to look back and say, "Boy, I'm glad I just left all that stuff I bought the other day out on the counter so I'd have to deal with it later or pretend it doesn't exist." Future you is going to resent the hell out of right now you for not putting that shit away when you got home. But how awesome is it to look at a previously cleaned countertop that's still clean because you're not using it as a waystation for every bit of crap that you bring through the door? A little bit of effort in the present is going to save you a ton of time in the future. Mini challenge. Look around. Find 10 things that aren't where they belong. Put them away. Make your bed. I can hear you whining from here. Seriously. I know you don't want to make your bed. I know you don't see the point. I've heard every excuse and rationalization imaginable for not making your bed, and some that I definitely had never imagined. But a messy bed makes a room look messier, and a made bed brings a focal point of cleanliness and order, making even a messy room look a little bit better. It's also a small but obvious form of control over your environment. Unmade beds are agents of entropy. They're only going to get worse. First, the bedding is in disarray. Then laundry starts to pile up on it. Then there's so much other stuff on it that there's no room to sleep unless you toss everything on the floor. Sometime later, you realize you can't remember when you last washed your sheets. Taking a minute to make your bed immediately snaps some order into the chaos. It's also a great place to start if you aren't ready to tackle anything more complex. It's one step, one tiny thing you do in the morning, and then you're done. Bed Making 101. Making your bed doesn't have to be a complicated production. Just pull the sheets up, straighten the blankets, and put the pillows back where they belong. If you're someone who believes your bed needs to breathe, although you do much more in the war against dust mites by washing your sheets on a regular basis and giving your mattress a semi-regular vacuuming, some people are really, really into the idea that beds need to breathe. Fold your sheets and blankets down neatly by the foot of the bed and arrange your pillows. Oh, and I can just hear some of you now. "Why should I make my bed? I'm just going to mess it up later anyway." Well, smartasses, you wash your dishes even though you're going to use them later. You hang your clothes up even though you're going to wear them later. You throw your trash away even though you're going to make more later. The continued use of an item doesn't mean you never have to clean or maintain it. Just make your damn bed. You'll be surprised at how much cleaner your bedroom looks from that one thing. There's this fundamental resistance that people have to making their beds, which comes from a whole lot of different places. Most often, it's because you were made to do it as a child, and refusal to do it as an adult is a way of reclaiming some control over your environment. And that's totally fine. It's human nature to rebel against structure that has been imposed on us, especially in our younger years when we had little to no power of our own. If that's the case, it may be difficult to come back around to choosing to make your own bed, but perhaps with time, you'll see the benefit and decide to do it. Keep your flat surfaces clear. This is as much psychological as anything else. Flat surfaces like counters, tables, dressers, nightstands, etc., tend to accumulate a lot of crap. When they're all piled up with stuff, visually, they're messy, they're overwhelming, they make everything look bad, and the whole thing makes you feel like conquering your mess is hopeless. By keeping the most visible flat surfaces clear on a daily basis, You'll have tangible proof that your cleaning and organizing efforts do, in fact, make a difference. There are practical benefits, too. Most messes tend to build up on flat surfaces, so when you clear them off, you're not just playing mind games with yourself. You're actually tackling a fairly significant portion of your overall mess. Even if you can't clean everything, you can still get one table or counter completely clear and keep it that way with minimal effort every day. And that one surface is going to go a long way toward a cleaner home in general. Surface Cleaning 101. Pick a surface that you see multiple times a day that tends to accumulate clutter. Devote 1 or 2, or 5, no judgment here, 20-10s to clearing it off completely. And then take 5 minutes or so every day to reset it back to clean. If your kitchen counter always ends up a mess of shopping bags, junk mail, and random things you just drop there because it's easier, make that your focus. If your nightstand is so crowded that you can't fit your phone on it overnight to charge, that might be a good place to start. Pick somewhere highly visible that tends to amass more crap than seems possible, and clear it off. Make sure you aren't just relocating the mess somewhere else. Find a logical home for each thing and put it away. If you make this into a daily habit, stuff won't have the chance to turn your flat surfaces into giant, unmanageable disaster zones. Unfuck tomorrow morning. Let's face it, mornings are chaos. We wait until the last possible minute to wake up, get ready for the day half asleep, usually forget something critical in our mad rush, and fly out the door basically unprepared for the day ahead because we've just completely run out of time to get ready. None of us are at our best when we're bleary-eyed and trying not to be late. In keeping with our theme of a little bit of effort now saves you a lot of work later, try setting up a nightly routine that makes the next morning go a little more smoothly. I know. This just reeks of your mom yelling at you to lay out your outfit the night before school. But work with me a little bit here. It makes sense. Think realistically about what trips you up in the morning. Do you lose time trying to find matching shoes or your keys? Is trying to throw together a last-minute lunch costing you time? Or money and takeout, because let's face it, that's way easier. Do you forget to take your meds, only to realize when you're on the road and your pills are at home? Forgotten? Get all that shit together the night before and make your morning that much easier. Doing 20 minutes worth of work before bed can save you endless aggravation in the morning. Remember, future you will appreciate whatever right now you manages to do to make life a little easier. How to unfuck tomorrow morning. Tonight. Wash the dishes in your sink. Get your outfit for tomorrow together, including accessories. Set up coffee, tea, breakfast. Make your lunch. Put your keys somewhere obvious. Take your medication. Set out your meds for the morning. Charge your electronics. Pour a little cleaner in the toilet bowl, if you don't have pets or children or sleepwalking adults. Set your alarm. Go to bed at a reasonable hour. Trash goes in the trash can. Seems pretty basic, right? Well, take a look around and see how many dryer sheets, pieces of food packaging, supermarket flyers, napkins, shopping bags, and other assorted pieces of trash you have sitting around. It's a fact of human nature. Sometimes the trash doesn't make it to the trash can. Same goes for recycling. While this is certainly an extension of put it away, not down, it also requires a little bit of self-awareness. What trash are you creating? And what do you do with it once you create it? Packaging is a common culprit here. You buy something new, take it out of the packaging, and get right to using it. Meanwhile, the empty packaging is sitting on the counter where you left it, forgotten forever. Or at least until your next big cleanup. Just a few extra seconds and a couple more steps can solve that problem. If you don't have some kind of trash receptacle in every room, get one. Throwing your trash away is a lot easier when it doesn't require a special trip. Make sure your recycling bin is accessible, too. It's not worth it to invest in some kind of complex sorting system if it's too far away or so inconvenient to get to that you'll never use it. The solution can be as simple as another trash can, designated just for recycling, stored right next to your existing trash can. Don't make it more complicated than it needs to be. Of course, part of this habit is taking the trash and recycling out of your house on a regular basis. If you have a designated trash pickup day, make sure you're keeping up with it. If not, assign yourself a day when you take all the garbage and recyclables wherever they need to go once they leave your home. Do the dishes every day. Listen, it's just a fact that dirty dishes multiply infinitely until they fill up every square inch of available space in your home. The longer you leave them, the more they breed. Until the best option to deal with them seems to be lighting a match and hoping a nice cleansing fire will make them go away. But it doesn't have to be this way. If you can manage to incorporate doing your dishes into your daily routine, you'll only need to invest a few minutes at a time in dealing with them, rather than having to set aside the better part of an afternoon. And best of all, no fire involved. Dishes are probably the most hated household chore in existence, and they also tend to be some of the worst contributors to a mess. Those two things are not a coincidence. Dishes are such a problem because we hate dealing with them. But if you keep up with your dishes every single day rather than letting them sit and fester, they become just a tiny annoyance rather than an undefeatable enemy. Try to get into the habit of dealing with your dishes immediately after using them. If doing the dishes is just as much a part of mealtime as food preparation and eating, you'll soon find that the dish problem isn't that much of a problem after all. Wash, dry, and put it away, goddammit! Laundry and dishes have 3 steps, everyone. It's not done until it's put away. Be honest. How much laundry do you have sitting around where it doesn't belong? Clean clothes languishing in laundry baskets? Finished loads sitting in the dryer? And let's not forget the ever-present floor robe. Your floor, or chair, bed, desk, is not the best place to keep your clothes. I bet you have dressers and/or closets and such designed especially to deal with all of those clothes. The trouble is, they're not going to do you any good unless you use them. First things first, though. You can't put things away if everything doesn't have a home. So make sure you have enough storage for your stuff, and if not, it's time to look into less stuff or more storage. Less stuff is almost always the better and easier answer. Once you have adequate storage, you actually need to use it. Putting your clothes away saves you from doing a ton of laundry, too, because sometimes you just scoop stuff up and wash it, even if you're not sure it's actually dirty. You know you do. It's easier than taking a couple of extra seconds to figure out whether or not you can wear it again. Make sure all of your laundry has a place, so that when you do a load or two, putting it away isn't a major feat of engineering and organization. Once you have a home for everything, the only reason for leaving clean clothes all over the place is your own unwillingness to take a few extra minutes to put them away. It's okay. We've all been there. But now we're trying to get past it. Make it a habit to get clean clothes to where they belong immediately after everything is dry, rather than leaving things neglected in the dryer, in the laundry basket, or on the drying rack, or on the floor. As far as dishes go, washing them is great, but it's a big pain-in-the-ass process that none of us enjoys. It's gross, and your hands get all wet, and you have to stand up for a long time, and it's just tedious. If you're facing a sink full of dirty dishes, there's very little in the world that's less appealing than having to take the time to wash them and leave them to dry. Including the additional step of putting them away makes the whole process seem even crappier. Even if you're lucky enough to have a dishwasher, you still need to load it and run it, which is kind of annoying too. So I understand the inclination to want to stand back and celebrate once you've gotten the damn things washed. Really, I do. But you aren't done until they're put away. Running the dishwasher is all well and good, but if your sink is accumulating a mountain of dirty dishes because your clean ones are still camped out in the dishwasher, well, your dish system isn't working so well. Put them away. Same rules apply if you hand wash and use a drying rack. Either put them away as soon as they're dry, or help the process along by grabbing a dish towel and drying them right away. The habit of put it away, goddammit, is a fairly advanced one because it adds time to an already unpleasant process, and it requires expending extra effort after you've already worked pretty hard on getting the stuff clean and dry. It takes a little longer to incorporate into your everyday routine. But once you've gotten into the habit of putting your dishes and laundry away, you'll find yourself so much further ahead of the game than you started out. Mini challenge. Do you have laundry that needs to be put away? Go put 10 items away. Maybe even empty a whole laundry basket. Deal with your invisible corners. After you've been living somewhere for a significant amount of time, you start to accumulate things in spaces I refer to as invisible corners. Invisible corners are those areas that have become dumping grounds for random crap for so long that you fail to really register them when you look around. Maybe it's a pile of unshredded mail and random electronic accessories stashed under an end table, or a stack of unpacked boxes in a little-used closet, or that jumble of daily detritus that permanently lives on the kitchen counter. Whatever and wherever your particular collections of stuff are, chances are they've been there long enough that you barely see them anymore, even when they're right in your way day in and day out. Invisible corners can contribute to the overall mess in a way that you might not realize. After spending a bunch of time doing your regular maintenance cleaning, you may find that your space still doesn't feel clean for some reason. That might be due to an invisible corner or two that's leading to an overall feeling of disarray. These spots, for some reason, have proven to be convenient or easy places to stash things you aren't dealing with. So they become a jumble of miscellaneous stuff that just grows and grows over time, unnoticed and unaddressed. To find your invisible corners, it might be necessary to employ some before pictures or even another set of eyes. You might be registering these areas in the same way you register your walls or furniture. Not at all. You know they're there, but they never sink in as something you actually need to deal with. So consider taking a 360-degree set of pictures and really looking at them to see what spots you have that need to be dealt with. Or bring in a trusted friend or family member to take a look around and see what jumps out. A fresh set of eyes is sometimes all it takes to point out areas that are obvious to others but invisible to you. Invisible corners can exist anywhere, large or small, hidden or exposed. You may have them in your refrigerator, in a closet, in the middle of the living room, in your front entryway, at the foot of your bed, anywhere. They can consist of just 3 or 4 items, or they can be stacks and stacks of boxes containing dozens of things each. Regardless of the size or scope of the invisible corner, it's not going to get any better unless you identify and disassemble it. The great thing about invisible corners is that they generally don't take that long to deal with. They've grown and accumulated stuff over who knows how long, but they can almost always be managed in a few 2010s. The difficult part is keeping them from reappearing. Something about those particular spots makes them prime dumping grounds for stuff, and you've already proven that you can ignore their existence on a daily basis. You may have success with rearranging things so that the spot is no longer able to accumulate stuff, or you may need to add it into your maintenance cleaning routine. Whatever method you employ to deal with them, make sure your invisible corners aren't reappearing due to inattention. Tackle an invisible corner. Take a set of pictures of one main room in your home, making sure every part of the room is in at least one picture. Identify an invisible corner that needs to be cleaned up. Set a timer for 20 minutes and work on it, taking a 10-minute break afterward. Repeat with another 20-10 if needed, until the area is all cleaned up. Take pictures. Everyone loves a makeover, but the trouble with cleaning up your own mess is that sometimes when you're in the middle of it, it's really difficult to see any progress that you've made. Your brain is constantly updating its internal picture of what that space looks like, so you don't necessarily remember exactly how messy it was to begin with. Snapping a quick picture before you start, and then at intervals throughout the cleaning process, and finally when you're finished, accomplishes several things. First, after working for a while, you'll likely feel like you haven't made any noticeable progress. Having a clear before picture reminds you what it really looked like to start, and how far you've come. It can also be helpful in pointing out hidden areas that need attention. By letting you look at the environment from outside, a good before picture can help you turn a critical eye to the area and see things you may not have noticed before. Plus, once you're finished and the area is clean, you have visual proof of what you've accomplished, and also a reference to look at once things start getting messy again. When things start to accumulate and it all begins to feel hopeless, you can always refer back to your pictures to remind yourself that not only can you do it, but you have done it. Remind yourself that your home can be nice and